Alright. Who's doing number one? Oh, a reminder, turn to page 112. The laboratory discussion presentation grading form. We'll be designing 4 points today. Lewis asks the basis. So, please get those ready. The group is presenting number one, will they please come up? And if you haven't already, will you please pass in your labs?
Even number one, the first part of our question asked us to listen to class data. Was Tata and SCD varied from family to family on the periodic table? And so basically made a point of class data, we made a diagram of like how data showed that from family one to heavy metals, the CD increase with heavy metal, family one being pH of 5.49, average group. Family two being 5.7, transition metals being 5.19, and then the most acidic heavy metals being 2.52. So we concluded that basically a CD increase is going to the right on the periodic table. And then for the second part, we're asked NA plus or NG2 plus, which one would be more acidic and basically why. We see on the periodic table, NG2 plus is more to the right than NAD plus, so we said that NG2 plus would be more acidic. And then the third part was asking, would it be preferable to apply Li, Mn, or Ca sulfate to the solid ground? And it tells us the solid ground is acid-loving, so the most acidic would be the best one, which would be Mn, since it's also more to the right than the other shoes.
For the last one, we spoke to draw a picture about the formation of the acid, actually. So basically what happened is like, as Nadia has concluded earlier, that as it moves to the right of the periodic table, it becomes more acidic. And it also agrees with the electronegativity. As you can see from here that as you move to the right, it will increase. There are some exceptions, but very few are there. So the main cause is like, because like the more electronegativity, it's like it will attract more electrons. So the hydrogen will be more positive with respect to the oxygen atoms. So you tend to lose, or the hydrogen atom will tend to get out of the molecules and form with another water molecules to form the hydromium ions. This is the H2O plus. This basically explains why it will increase the acidity of the solution. And for the last one, we are asked to explain the relationship between the charge density with the acidity. So basically, we define the density as the positive charge divided by the ionic radius, which is given here, 0.81, something like that. So it, as you can see that as we move from left to right, the radius decreases. Excluding the groups that excluding the halogens. So the charge is basically the same, but as radius decreases, so it will increase. So this is the explanation is the same as the electronegativity. Any question?
Yeah.
Thank you. Question two. Please come forward. Yes, there is.
What kinds of observation or shifts in properties allow you to ensure that a complexation of the action has occurred? So, this first part. I put before the word, but I have the order different, so ignore the first word. So, a color change is an indication of complexation for our transition metals. Post-transition metals, excluding zinc and aluminum. And that way, examples out here our copper reaction, including complexation.
Yeah, the reason that we exclude zinc from this condition is that zinc originally has a full, the zinc 2 plus originally has two full D shells. So it's itself is colorless, so there won't be any color change even if we have any complex from it, because there will be no shift of color or wavelength.
Okay, he's actually talking about the second color change here, which is Zn2 plus exists in aqueous solution of complex CnH2O4. Zinc will complex with ammonia. Based on your answer, predict what change will be observed if you perform procedure one with Zn2 plus instead of copper as usual. And here we have copper. For zinc, if the nitrate at base form precipitate, which disappears upon adding more base, may be inferred that complexation has occurred. This is confirmed by reappearance of precipitate when strong acid. When we use that nitric acid, it's not added to the mixture.
Question?
So, don't go away yet. You said that you can infer color change for post-transition also?
Yeah, we have for our transition metals and post-transition metals excluding
those. I thought post-transition metals don't have color.
I mean, actually we're saying we are including those without color.
Like aluminum,
yeah. Actually, there are more than that. More than those two, which are colorless ions.
So how do you infer that, what are the two ways you can infer a complexation reaction with those transition models if they're colorless?
If we add base to cations, and it goes to, the charge goes to zero, and a precipitate group forms. And when we add active back, the charge will come back, the positive charge will come back. So it will
that doesn't necessarily apply to a complex one. It means that you're just reversing the precipitation reaction, right? So how do you, the way that you would infer that a plus transition metal from a complex is by the addition of excess base and seeing it start with the precipitate and then going to the precipitate disappearing with the addition of the same base.
Okay. Notice that about the zinc.
Yeah, maybe going
forward
with the charge, starts charging the opposite way.
precipitate as zinc.
Yeah, but you want to make it more general for the all of those transitions because they are colorless, right? So then the acid actually is a way to test if something has already complexed, right? If you can put acid into it and see if it's going to take them back, it must be complex. That's our curve, right? Yes.
If they don't, then we have to just go.
You haven't measured any way to do that. You don't know how to do that. You don't be concerned with NH3 complexes in the post-transition necessarily, especially about making inferences as to whether they complex or not, because we haven't really tested that in lab. The post-transitions are very easy because you see, the transitions are very easy because you see a change in color, right? And if you remember from spectral analysis, those solutions, that when you add NH3 to any solution that contains transition metals, you get a shift of the absorbance peak toward the lower wavelengths and a corresponding deeper color of solution than beforehand, or a complete change in color of solution. Right? So that's how you infer NH3 complexation.
You can also, if you added OH, we've learned that OH is a stronger as far as heavy metals as well. You can see if NH3 complex with a heavy metal or post transition metal or element, if you had a charged item on and forming precipitate, you added NH3 and it dissolved again, that would prove it. But you guys systematically studied that kind of thing. I mean, you did some experiments like it, but you know, if it doesn't dissolve, that doesn't tell you whether or not it's complex or not. So, don't worry about it.
Part 3 of this experiment was intended to specifically show you that certain things can and cannot complex, but predicting whether complex is post-transition, we haven't. So, question,
Just say you're going out. Yeah, just do that. I'm going out Friday and Saturday night.
I think I know what you're going to do. Are you speaking in reference to like aluminum plus 3?
I got pissed about Saturday.
Are you continually add base to supercipitate and see how much?
No, it's oxalate.
I don't know what Saturday. He was like, so he was like getting some entire time. You have to get his hope. I went to some up here. Yeah, I was going to get some
Yeah, actually, those two are really good presentations in the first place, but Lewis basis is dependent on the species, and it doesn't necessarily imply that it'll form a precipitate if it's a good Lewis base. So NH3 is an extremely good Lewis base, so it can displace that precipitating agent pretty readily for most of it. And as we'll see further in this discussion, you'll notice that in part 3, actually, there's a preference for which metals on the periodic table will show that tendency to complex with NH3 or OH.
So if, like, the
precipitating
agent doesn't go really
affect
the results,
but it sort of does, right? It's kind of like a marker. It's kind of like a way for you to see what affects what metals.
Right.
What will complex with what metals? For instance, you you do a precipitation reaction, you have a layer of precipitate there. Now, in order to dissolve that precipitate, it has a charge zero. In order to dissolve that precipitate, you're going to have to put something on there that's non-charged that's going to let the charge come back to the thing so it can go back in the solution. So it'll displace the precipitating agent, right? That thing that's going to displace it will be whatever Lewis base is going to be most favored for that metal ion that's precipitated. Whatever it wants a complex with will make it go back in solution.
Yeah, I think the best way to think about it is if you have a precipitate and you pour base on it and that precipitate disappears, then you know that whatever you poured on it was a better Lewis base. Okay, so if you were given a list of Lewis bases, from greatest to weakest, you would say, okay, well, the greatest one would dissolve a precipitate formed with a weaker one, right? It probably won't see anything like that on a test or anything because the concept's kind of vague from this experiment, but that's just the way it happens.
So should we see different results with different
agents
in the same metal and same base?
Could you repeat that question?
Like, if we had like aluminum 3+ and NH3 and a different precipitating agent, should we have seen a different result?
Probably not. Unless the precipitating agent was a stronger Lewis base than what precipitated aluminum. See what I mean? Yeah. NH3 is actually one of the best Lewis bases. So, in OH minus, especially if you recall from, I think, procedure 1 or 2 from Part 2, you can infer that NH3 is a better Lewis base than OH minus for the transition metals.
For the transition metals. Right. And then we hold every single part here.
Right.
You see that. Anyways, anyone else have a question? Okay, question three.
What?
Okay, so the first part is there a link between a cation's tendency to complex with OH or NH3 and the acidity of the cation? And basically, what we think is that the more acidic and the lower the pH, the more likely it is to complex. And what we did for both of the charges, we combined the precipitate to complex and the complex. We combined those two areas, and so you can kind of, by doing that, you can kind of see the trends. Since we ordered the areas to be least reactive to the more reactive, no reaction, precipitate, there's somewhat of a reaction, and then the precipitate, the complex, and the complex. Both of the data was a little weird, that we were having trouble finding the trends. And that's why we combined the two, so you can kind of see the trends in both. Yeah, I guess that's it. The only thing, though, is that one thing to point out is that between the heavy and the transition, just the way the data was laid out, you can definitely say that the conclusion is true for the NaOH. However, you can't necessarily say it for the NH3 just because of this one right here. This one actually did form a precipitate, so it doesn't quite follow, but that's more or less true.
I have a question.
Yeah.
As a general rule, could you say that heavy metals and transition metals together complex more often than family 1 and 2 together?
Yes.
Okay. Actually, I'd like to make a quick note. Transition, NaOH. You see that some people reported a precipitate complex, only true for zinc. Not true for any of the others that we tested. It's impossible. It was a misinterpretation of the experiment that led to that data point. So bear that in mind.
Yeah, the X is just the most predominant thing.
The predominant thing that we found on the chart, the majority of them. So there's tends to be this general trend with the predominant thing that we found on the chart,
The next part of the question was, based on your answer, predicted palladium 2 plus really complex, and palladium is... Can you see that? Wait, I'll lift it up a little better. Okay, this.
Ignore the stuff on the bottom.
Yeah. I think we don't look. Okay, palladium is a transition metal, so 46 there. So we predicted that. Likely in sodium hydroxide, since it's a transition metal, it's going to form a complexation reaction, and
it's either going to form a precipitate or precipitate to complex with an AOH.
We didn't get any results that it just formed a precipitate with ammonia, so it's going to
suppress. The class data showed it formed a complex, which we combined those two in this category. So it would, we predict that it would form a complex with NH3, and either precipitate only or precipitate complex.
Last part of the question. Lead is extremely toxic in humans. Lead poisoning is usually treated with chelating agents, substances that can form stable complex and ions, and offer an explanation for why this is effective. Because if you add these chelating agents, then the lead is stable and it doesn't react with any of the chemicals that are in the human body, and then it can be excreted through body without harming you. It is done soon enough. Give the explanation why they do that. So that it's stable.
Any questions?
Any questions?
Zinc can go from a precipitate to complex. None of the other transition metals will. Okay?
NOH.
With NOH. NOH. Okay.
So, you're not seeing precipitate complexes on transition metals with NOH. Here it is. Only with NH3. Well, that doesn't really work.
It stays precipitate.
Yeah.
So what, how people interpret it, I was going to have acid.
All right, our question was, can you predict the salt solubility in base if you know that cation is acidity?
Okay. We're also supposed to summarize the class data for part three. And basically what we're doing in part three was considering whether the process of converting the insoluble metal compound to soluble complex is more related to the cation's acidity or to its ability to complex with NH3 or OH-. And so we have to take our information from our first and second part of the lab to make our hypothesis, which basically found that the pH is going to increase on the left side of the periodic table, and also, and break, which is in this part, and then you can see family 1 has the higher pH average, and then it decreases to the right. And then also, we, as was just discussed with the recent groups, the reactions with NaOH or NH3+. So then in part three, what we did was we kind of compared the both of them to come up with how, when it's combined with an insoluble metal compound, if the precipitate would then be soluble. And we found that in family one, it was very soluble, and we never even had a precipitate when we mixed it, so that was funny. And then in family number two, it never dissolved, and we always had a precipitate. And then in the transitions in the heavy metals, it depended on whether it was mixed with NH3 or NaOH, but it didn't necessarily matter what the metal compound was, because in all cases of NH3, the precipitate was dissolved. For the transition metals and for the heavy metals, in all cases of NaOH, the precipitate was dissolved. So based on this information, we would, as far as predicting salt solubility, if we know the cation's acidity, we would say if we know the cation's acidity, then we could place it into an area on the periodic table, as we've seen. If it's a higher pH, then we're going to assume that it's going to be in the family one area, which then we would predict would be very soluble. Whereas if it's got a low pH, then we would assume that it's towards the heavy metal, heavy end, and then we would think that it would be soluble in NaOH. Or if it's a little higher, then we think it would be transition, then it would be soluble in NH3. And that would also be fairly easy to test, because that's, you remember in the lab, because you just kind of mix the two together and see which one it is. So it would also be useful for identifying whatever it is that you're trying to make soluble.
Second part of our question is, it says that Ni2+ is acidic and forms complexes with NH3. So can you draw a picture depicting the Lewis acid-base reaction between an Ni2+ and NH3? And it says Mg2+ is slightly acidic and water and does not complex with OH- or NH3. Does this fact import an answer?
Okay, the first part, drawing the reaction. We've got our nickel 2+ combining with an NH3, which is a Lewis base and has two electrons that it can share with this Lewis acid, which wants some. And the result of this reaction is nickel and the NH3. We think there's still going to be the 2+ charge there. And supposedly, depending on the number of waters that were originally complexed with the nickel, will have that same number with the NH3.
Same number of molecules.
Yeah, but we didn't get that information for the question, so whatever it is would be
six.
Okay.
So if it's six in that case, it's gonna be Ni, and then you're gonna have six water molecules attached to that, and then the NH3 is gonna react with that. And then this is going to replace right here. It's going to be Ni, and it's going to be NH3, substrate 6, with the charge of +2. Then you're going to have those six waters added on to the product side.
Indeed. The second part of the question was about
magnesium 2 plus. And it said that it was slightly acidic, and our average was 5.73, and it should not complex. So we gathered a little more information on it. It's from family 2, and when combined with NH3, we get no reaction, and when combined with NaOH, we get a precipitate and then a complex. And this right here, the combination with NaOH, does not support this conclusion. So we got a yes and a no. So we don't know what to make of that. This is from the data.
Do you have a copy of the data?
What we used was to determine this because it wasn't mixed with an inside metal. We used part 2, and we're just mixing it with NH3 and NaOH, which basically, I don't know if the group of 4 pi is better data just depicting that, but that's what we have right here. It's family 2 with NaOH, which is a complex with no reaction with NH3. And that's why we got it.
Solubility in the base and have the cation tendency to form complexes. So what we did is we looked at the data from part two to see what the tendency of each cation was to form a complex in either NaOH or NH3. And we saw that family 1s didn't form complexes in either base because there was no precipitate at all. Family 2 didn't form a complex in either one. Transition cations form complexes in NH3 and heavy metals form complexes in NH4. In NH3, we also noticed that, or in the transition cations, we noticed that there was a split in the fast zeta between precipitate and precipitate to complex in the NaOH solution. We think this error was probably because a lot of the teams didn't know the difference between what a precipitate was versus what a precipitate to complex was, where there should have been some precipitate, and same thing for the heavy metals in NH3. And then knowing the cation tendency to form complexes allowed us to predict its salt solubility, because if a cation forms a complex in a certain base, its salt will dissolve in that base. So since family 1 cations didn't form a complex in anything, they didn't precipitate, remember there's nothing to dissolve, so they didn't dissolve in either base. Family 2 cations form precipitates in both K2CO3 and K2C2O4. But because they didn't form a complex in either NaOH or NH3, we know that these precipitates dissolve. And the family 3 elements form precipitates, again, with both the precipitating reagents. And since we know they form complexes in NH3, we know the salts were soluble in NH3. And for the heavy metals, we had to precipitate with both precipitating reagents and form a complex of NaOH, therefore it was soluble in NaOH.
Okay. The second part says the lead 2 plus ion has a pronounced tendency to react with proteins and interferes with the biosynthesis of hemoglobin in humans. Fair likelihood of finding lead ions rather than precipitate lead compounds in water of low versus high pH. So yeah, lead is a heavy metal, and heavy metals are found to be highly acidic. So you would probably find lead ions in a
acidic solution, and you would find the lead compounds in the basic solution. Okay.
Basic solutions of lead are harmful as well.
Well, that's acidic. I mean, if you had acid and acid, nothing should happen, right?
So it therefore would be more soluble in NaOH, right? Which is a base.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a basic solution. So an acidic solution is just the opposite. It's going to form compounds with the leftover conjugate bases from the acid.
Okay.
Sorry.
That
works. That's what I can do. Yeah, but it's just a definition of the base, right? The base is a high concentration of OH minus, which means that post transition is soluble and less heat. So, did everyone understand that?
No.
Okay, so PB, 2 plus, where is it? Post transition or transition?
Post
transition. So, what is it more soluble?
From the experiment.
NaOH, right? Sodium hydroxide. What defines a basic solution?
What is the definition of a base?
What is the definition of a basic solution? High concentration of OH minus ions, right? So therefore, with an increased concentration of OH minus ions, it can form stable complexes with what? Right? Because lead's more soluble in NaOH. Is that clear? No? Yes?
Yeah, what if, I mean, you have the lead solution, what happens to the lead acid?
I think you get more, you get less solubility. It'd be less of the lead.
It may. It wouldn't precipitate. See, you chose the wrong acid. If you chose, I think, H2SO4, it would precipitate, I think. But nitric acid, nitrates are always soluble, so you don't really have an anion that can precipitate it out. But so that's hard.
Yeah.
Part of our question was to present our interpretation of the reactions of copper sulfate and potassium iodide. Okay, we believe that, okay, first of all, we observed that a white PPT in brown solution was observed. Then after that, we believe that the iodide was oxidized from I minus to I2, and copper was reduced from Cu2 plus to Cu plus. And we checked from referring to the CRC handbook, we found that the only possible PBT between copper 2 plus and iodide minus is copper iodide, which is CuI. Okay, in order to confirm our observation, we did two experimental tests, which is copper sulfate plus potassium nitrate, to prove that iodide is needed to form the PBT, and sodium sulfate plus potassium iodide to show that Cu2 plus is needed to form the PBT. When we add hexane to the solution forms two layers, a purple layer, which we assume that is hexane plus iodine, and a brown layer, which is water and copper iodide. And when we check again from the CRC handbook, we found that CuI is brownish, insoluble, and soluble in ammonia, which matches our prediction. And that's it.
All right, the second part of our question states, is a fact when NH3 is added to a precipitate of CuCO3, the precipitate dissolves. And they want us to offer an explanation based on our investigation of the reaction and the knowledge gained from the past built in part three. All right, there's a few things to keep in mind when we think about the reaction. And that is that Lewis acids want to join with the best possible Lewis base that they're in solution with. In this reaction, Cu plus 2 is a Lewis acid, and NH3 is a much better Lewis base than the carbonate. So therefore, the Cu plus 2 will break away from the carbonate in order to join with the NH3 to form the complex ion. Shown there, which happens to be soluble, and that will cause precipitate to break up and disappear because the copper is no longer joined with the carbonate.
Can you raise that up? You're going to talk at the bottom.
Okay. Then we checked our data in part three to confirm this, and it's a little hard to read, but it's a chart in the left box. It's just saying that we're using a transition cation, copper plus 2. And in our reference test, we precipitated it. We got a cloudy blue precipitate. The addition of NaOH did not cause the precipitate to go away. But when we added the NH3, the precipitate did indeed go away. Any questions?
Did you put your transparency up from the reaction part four? Could you explain what role the NH3 plays?
It basically forces the reverse redox from Cu plus to Cu2 plus.
In doing that, what's your observation for the hexane layer? What happens to the hexane layer? Does it become clear? Does it stay purple?
It became clear.
It became clear. Yeah. Why?
Because the I minus was able to become I2 again. And since I2. No. Oh, wait, no. Sorry, the reverse. I2 became I minus.
Right, back in the solution. Water. So the NH3 kind of served as a driving force of forcing the reaction backward, which, by the way, isn't contrary to what we've been telling you all along about redox, that reactions only go in one direction, because in this case you actually have something that's aiding in that, where in general redox reactions can't go backwards just as they are. Does that make sense?
The real reason for this reaction going backwards is up for debate. The people who don't study this kind of thing but who are chemists can argue about it. But you don't have to know why it happened, just that it did. Just that you observed it going backward and forward. You added acid and went back again. It just shows you that there's a Lewis complex, Lewis acid-based reaction.
Thank you.
guys all did a very good job today. Alright, let me tell you real quick. You're going to be back here at 1. Nancy's going to be lecturing for an hour, and then we're going to be doing analysis of reactions. Don't worry about today. It's going to be fun. Everyone has the most fun in this reaction. You're going to be given reactions, and it's up to you to figure out. We're not going to tell you anything more than to do the reaction, but it's going to be up to you to fill it out. We'll go into more detail on how you're going to fill all this out when you get down there. You're only going to be writing up 4 reactions today and presenting the 5th. But we'll go over that in class and you can fill out the sheets. Please remember to turn in your sheets up front, your grading sheets, and finish those.
Please note my students that you get.
Oh yeah. We also need you to fill out these evaluation forms.
Yes.
Sorry. No quiz today. You just thought we'd say that and tell you that now, so you fill out this evaluation. That's a joke.
It looks shorter. Like you got a layer right here.
Sorry.
Okay, well then I'm just an idiot. Don't pay me attention. Thank you. Thank you.
Huh? These laboratory discussions. And my students come up here because it'll just be easier for me to pass these out. No, I'm not supposed to go to your teacher or anything like that. I need some of the volunteers in this to the chemistry.
Drop next to 80.
Yeah, and we can just send it for 2 months.
And
you just send it for 2 months.
And you just send it for 2 months. And the thing is, during the time of the day, I want to do that. I'm going to go talk to you. I want to show maybe ergonomics.
No, I think I
do. I can do physics.
But you're the only person I know that is in the class who doesn't have to take the exam. That can possibly
Can you brother Super, one more time?
If you have any comments to make, please make them on the back. It'll help me and Mike be better teachers. These evaluations of us and Nancy are just for me and Mike. You'll be filling out an evaluation for Nancy later on. I don't want to see them. Give them up here in the yellow envelope. Only my students should be putting in the envelope that says Deanne Taylor. Mike's envelope's up here. You put it in Mike's envelope. And hold on 1 second. And when you're done, we've done filling out the evaluations, put them in the appropriate envelope, and you can leave.
I'm not sure about these two, but this one is the exception to the rule.
The thing is,
if I take engineering, then if I take physics, I'll take the IOE intro and ergonomics.
I have a question.
I'm looking at my brother.